Hi, and welcome to the FIF Pro podcast, Changing the Game. I'm Allie Riley. In this series, we'll be speaking to international female footballers about their personal journeys to success and find out what it's taken for them to reach the top of their game. And in celebration of the 30th anniversary of the FIFA Women's World Cup, we'll also be looking at how women's football has evolved over the last three decades and discuss what more needs to be done to protect the well-being of players and ensure that future generations can reach their full potential. Today, I'm talking with Carolina Marache.
I think that was the biggest experience and impact that I had in my career.
Carolina began playing for Italy's national women's team when she was 14 and went on to appear for her country in 153 games. She took part in six European championships and the first ever Women's World Cup in 1991. During her career, Carolina scored 550 goals in the Italian Women's League and 105 goals for Italy. After retiring as a player, she gained a law degree and also moved into coaching. She has since been head coach for the women's national teams of Canada, Trinidad and Tobago, and of course, Italy. In this episode, we'll be looking back at the Women's World Cup of 1991. Carolina, so happy to have you with us on the FIF Pro podcast and hear about the first ever Women's World Cup. I have so many questions. But first of all, do you remember finding out that there was going to be a World Cup for women in 1991?
For us, of course, it was a big excitement. Also because in our country, the women football wasn't so important. Actually, FIFA put the World Cup, put the big competition on top. And each country started to do something because, of course, each federation started to understand that women football was becoming a good level, and they started to do more serious tournament, the league in the country. So as a player in the country, like my country, where football is number one sport, for us, the World Cup is the most important thing in football. So when we were there, we immediately, we understand the level and the excitement, and also the mass media was all there. And so I think that was the biggest experience and impact that I had in my career, because it was something new. And we had the opportunity to play against Nigeria that, for example, we never play against them. And was also wasn't in our mind that we can play against Japan or against Nigeria or New Zealand. So it was very good.
That's incredible. Do you remember that moment when you qualified? Was there media attention around it?
The attention of Italy about women football is recent, because I think that just the last World Cup in France, I think that also because there was a Sky TV that show all matches, but from there, everybody started to watch women football. Before, nobody can see us. Nobody knew at the level in my time was good, because we arrived also second in a European championship. So, but nobody can see us. For the first time, it was in 2019 that everybody can see, and everybody now support women football. At that time, I remember also that I think that each country had their own TV. Just Italy doesn't have the TV that follow the players. So that was a big disappointment for us, of course. Actually, I discovered that I was the first player to score 3 goals in a World Cup. I didn't know that. I discovered just 5 years ago.
Because, oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's true that in all my career, I did stuff and I forget. Because in football, you can't remember what you did. You have to keep going all the time. What you did in your past is always gone like that. So if for this reason that I don't remember. For example, I don't remember the first match of the World Cup in 1991. I don't remember too who was. I think that we play also with the Taipan and something like that. But it's just that my mind was always for the future.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you're always ready to score the next goal, because you have scored many, many goals in your career. And I think, too, what you're saying about media, that's probably why so many of us remember games, is because you're seeing clips of it and it was on TV or it was recorded. And at that time, I understand that it was definitely different, which I have to ask, in terms of preparing for your games against opposition that you've never met before, was there any type of analysis, or what did you expect playing these teams?
No, wait. So at that time, there wasn't a match analyst, analyzation of the match, the preparation, but also the speed of a football was different than today. So there was American that they ran all the time. There were China that they had a good team. And the North European country like Sweden, Denmark, like always, they have always a good team. Also tactically, I remember, for example, Italy used to play mix zonal and man-to-man marking. So now there is no anymore man-to-man marking. So it's just a little bit different now. But if I have to say something, is also that tactically you can see something different in the men's side that we are not doing in the same time. For example, now in Italy, the keeper doesn't kick long ball anymore. We start to play from the back. That is because the coaches want to dominate the game, and you dominated the game if you don't lose the ball, if you keep the ball. You can see this in a men's side very clearly. In a women's side, not everybody. So it means that maybe we have to have a look at what the men's side does, because the best coaches are there, of course. So it's something, for example, I watch Guardiola, I watch Klopp. Of course, I watch this kind of, you can't repeat everything, but some idea, of course, has to come from there, because there are the best coaches in the world.
Yeah, well, I think there's definitely something to be said about understanding the differences between the men's and women's game and appreciating
Absolutely.
The differences. And that doesn't take away from the game being, you know, more or less exciting, I think, because we're not playing against men.
Exactly.
So when we're playing with our speed and our form of possession, that's what our opposition is doing. So it's not, that's, you know, what I struggle with is kind of so many critics and fans comparing apples to oranges, which is very frustrating.
Yeah, but if you think, it's just in women football. It's not in tennis. In tennis, nobody can think, okay, Serena Williams against Djokovic. Come on. And I have to say something, because at the end of my career, or just when I stopped to play, I live in Rome, and I used to play against the former players of Rome and Lazio, men's. They were 10 years more than me, and we used to play, you know, 5 against 5.
Wow.
Yeah. But because they are smart, and they understood, of course, that if the men do this and protect the ball, you can't do anything, because you can't move the men. Above all, a former player, you can't do it. But they understood that because they are smart. And we used to play, and we used to be enjoy also them. Because there wasn't a physical contact. You can express the speed, because it's just a reaction. And was amazing. And we were enjoying. I used to play with them almost once a week. And I score. It's not that, okay, they put you inside. No, I was like them. And above all, the mind of a football. I know if the ball arrived there, you can pass the ball in that way. I have to go there. It's football mentality. So it's normal that it's easier, but you cannot compare any sport. Any sport you can compare men and women. There is different. It's different. But it's also true that I hate, and in Italy, unfortunately, still that somebody ask and say, Maybe the field has to do small, or the net. And I say all the time, I say, listen, allora, first of all, Italian football is not the best football in the world. Because if you have to see the best football, you go in England for the League of England, or you watch the national team, French, US, Germany. If you watch this, it's completely different than in Italy. We need to move on. We are just a little bit back because we start our process to grow in just 5-6 years ago, when the federation decide that each professional men's team must have under 12 team of women, at least 20 players. From there, they start. Now, Inter, Roma, Juventus, Lazio, Verona, all of them has the women's sector. And of course, in the team, somebody believe more, like Juventus, that is the top team in Italy. Somebody believe more in women football, somebody believe less, but the pathway to growing is done, is there. So nobody can stay in the back now without being responsible.
Well, now I think if a team isn't doing well or the investment isn't there, it's now reflecting the men's investment. The clubs now have connected themselves to the women's team, which I think is a very interesting and hopefully promising way to address the investment in women's football in Italy and hopefully could be a model for the rest of the world.
Yeah, in one of the huge mistakes that still in Italy, no for the team like Juventus, Inter, that is okay. Somebody keep going to put women's sector below youth sector.
That's very common, I would say, across the globe.
And I say, you don't have to be smart to understand that. You don't have to be smart. Just think. Youth, women, the needs is completely different. It's two sectors that actually is opposite. Because of course it's a conflict, because we don't have anything if we are under the youth sector. It's the mentality. Youth sector is to build up players. Women's sector is about to win. It's normal.
Absolutely. And I think too, the academies, the boys and the men's academies, they have the men's team to look forward to model themselves after. They
exactly.
have this, there's already the motivation is there. The money is there, I think, organically, whereas what we're trying to start and achieve and break the cycle is to help women,
exactly.
which, clubs are obviously so reluctant to do, to see, to understand.
Also what is also very hard as a women coaches.
Mm-hmm.
Because of course, who decide is a man.
Right.
And the man knows other men. So, and actually, for us to be a coach in Serie A, you need to have my background. For the men, nothing. It's bad. Still bad.
So what would you say now for a little girl growing up in Italy compared to maybe the encouragement when you were growing up? Is there more now with Italy reaching the quarterfinals in 2019 and a little bit more excitement around women's football? Would you say there is more encouragement? I'm just thinking, how can we get more players, referees, coaches, management in these countries where maybe, so much focus is on the men?
No, I think that, first of all, is a good question what we can do. First of all, show good football. The responsibility of this is in our shoulder as a coaches, because you can have the best player in the world, but if the game is not good, you don't watch it. Instead, in Italy, now the people start to watch our game. What we can do is in my time, we didn't have any model. I couldn't have as a model Gianluca Vialli because he's a man. I'm a woman. I can't have a model like him. Now, instead, it's different for the young girl because now they understood who are Girelli, Bonansea. They are the player that score, the goalkeeper. Manuela Giuliano is midfielder. She did well. So now is they can have a model. And another important thing is the fathers of the girl. Now, everybody follow football in Italy, as you can imagine. And is easier for the father to bring the girl in the club where they are fan. So a fan of Rome take the daughter and bring the daughter to play with the Rome youth sector, women youth sector, of course, because he's a fan of Rome. So now all fathers, they are pro and they want the girl play football. I think also that could be a good idea to play around the world. Matches like, for example, America against Europe, and to play this in the country where they need to see us to be in a good way, cioè, not just a performance like that. No, show that maybe ecco, some matches around the world with this player, with good football, and that could be also an idea. Actually, to watch the best players in the world, because it's this, it's about the players, it's about their skill, it's about if I can emulate them, what can I learn from them? So I think that we have to show more football at the highest level.
And what would you say about, so in 1991, there were the first ever female officials. So for the most part, lineswomen. And then for the third place playoff, there was the first ever female referee at a FIFA match. And I know that's been a discussion even now because we feel that the standards maybe of the female referees when we have always female referees at our matches and at the World Cups that maybe the standards aren't high enough, but it's a reflection again of the game as well. How do we get an increase in the number of female refs, coaches, but also increase the standards when maybe the investment isn't there from the beginning?
Allora, about the referee, I have to think. I can say about the coaches, because for example, if in one country, the coach, in Italy, the coach is a female. It's good. But if we see how many coaches, female coaches we have in the league, we have now 2, 3. And again, they have the maximum experience in the highest level of football. The men, no. So we have to start to put women in my, what I said to Saraya, the responsible of women football in FIFA. I say to her, first of all, it's wrong to have one technical director for men and women. You need to have two technical directors, women side and men side. The needs are completely different. If you do this like FIFA or like UEFA, you push each country to have a technical director for women and technical director for men. Actually, if the technical director for women is a former player, of course you put in charge more women, because if I'm in charge to take a coach, I don't think about men, I think about female. But you have to put the female in the highest position. We need to have the position where we choose. Mm-hmm. Actually, sometimes it's the women that fight against other women, but that is another thing.
Yes, of course, of course.
But that is another topic.
Well, I think too, we're fighting for resources. We're fighting if only one woman coach is acceptable, if only one referee is going to be able to make it, then it pits all of us against each other.
Exactly, exactly. That is true. That is also true. It's true.
So it's still, systemic sexism.
Yeah.
So I mean, we've spoken a little bit about the professional league in Italy, and you were a player in that league for many years and now a coach. And what are the changes you've seen, and how, when you were playing, did you have a job on the side, and where has the league grown? I know we mentioned the investment now of the men's clubs, but what is the league looking like now in compared to maybe some of the other top leagues, and how has it changed?
The league was good. We had 14 teams. The level was good because I think that Italy was one of the first country to have international players. And the international players that arrive, Pia Sundhage, Motherwell, mm-hmm. Anne O'Brien, Sanchez, Susie Augustinsson, that she was the best player in the world, and nobody knows. Nobody knows her, and she was... I never saw another player like that, trust me. I never saw one like her. Much better than Marta. Cioè, she was phenomenal. And nobody knows her.
No.
And for this reason that this player arrived, and I think that we could have three foreign players for team.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So these three players, of course, they push up all other players. Because for us... was, wow, they are good, and I want to be like them. And you can see that how they train, because they were always the first to do in the group. They were always the first. They arrive always, they were first in the 100 meter, 1000 meter. They were always, and of course, to me was, I want to become like them, because they were our model. So, the league was, we weren't official professionals, but almost, for example, my salary was almost, I think, if not more than what the Italian player get now.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Maybe we were, I think that we were maybe 3-4 player that our salary was more than what they get now.
So some of the players were probably working or in school on the side.
Allora, it's true that what we used to do was train in the night from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock. Most of the player used to, at that time, I used to study. Many players had a job. But maybe because we didn't have the Twitter or Instagram or... was just the team, and we build up, was the true atmosphere that you needed to have in a team. Mm-hmm. And we were, as a mentality, we were very professional.
So do you think that leagues where, since obviously I see connection between what you're saying about kind of the sport, how you were able to, or at least, you know, the top players on your team were able to essentially be professional, not be worried too much about working on the side, your focus was on the team, you had this connection, and then the national team was also doing well in the Euros those years. And then now with leagues and teams where the players are fully professional, do you see that relate to the success of the national team if players are able to be fully professional in their day-to-day careers?
Absolutely, yes. What happened was when the professional men's club came in, what happened was that the players start to have the facility to train. They start to pass from 4 training sessions to each day's every session. They start to use regularly the gym. Totally change. They start to have the medical center where they have to go, the physiotherapists that take care about them. They start to have all professional environment that help the player to grow. So, of course, that. But I can express that. Last year, I was called from Lazio. I have to substitute the previous coach. And I took the team that they were in the 7th position. So I arrive, we start, we and my assistant, I say we because we came in 2, and we start to say to the player, listen, 4 days a week is not enough. If our target is the promotion in Serie A, we have to train every day. And I put this in place. And the first almost 2 months, we start, of course, we play. The first 5 games wasn't brilliant because, of course, I change everything, the intensity, the number of the session. After these five matches, we beat everybody. Nobody can stop us. What was? Not because I have the magic wood. It's because they start, of course, to have another physically. They were changing. They started to be athlete. They lost weight. They started to understand that, wait a moment, we started to do the test each 2 months. So the player is, I want to see my improvement. Before, there wasn't nothing of this. Now that we have almost the same player that came in Serie A, we struggling. But we know, of course, because we started to have this kind of training for 6 months from last year. When you play against Juventus, Rome, Inter, is years. The player is not that you build up the players. You need to have the best player. You have to recognize them and you have to improve them. Of course, if you have to improve the athlete that is at the highest level, what do you need? Details. Is this that? Of course, at the highest level is the details in physical preparation, in tactical preparation, in everything. And also in the way where the players manage themselves, of course. Also there is a detail, because if you want long career, you have to be smart. You can do stuff, but you have just with the brain.
Yeah, I think the advantage, like you're saying, of the national teams where their players on a day-to-day basis are fully professional is exactly like you say. When you meet up as a national team and you only have 12 days, it's just fine-tuning the details to make sure that those 20-some players can play together. Whereas those of us who don't have fully professional players, when we're getting together, it's trying to, again, is everyone eating okay? Do we need to be in the gym? The basics, the technique, understanding tactics, and trying to do all of that in 12 days, especially, you know, when we were New Zealand, we didn't have a camp together for 16 months. So those 2 weeks leading up to the Olympics, it's too many things to try to put into place.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, our conversation has spanned 30 years, which brings us to the 2023 FIFA Women's World Cup hosted by New Zealand and Australia. What do you think or hope the legacy of that World Cup will be?
The real facility for football. I used to live in Australia for 2 years and a half. Actually, I applied also for your country, now that I remember. The facility. I remember here we have the football center of Lazio, football center of Juventus, Rome. In Australia, there are the park and you bring the net and the goal and you bring, that is not football. That is something that is not good for us. Also in America, you have a field where there are number line and you don't understand where you are. What is that? So we need the facility. I don't know about New Zealand. I know about Australia. There is, I remember that one day I was with my dog in one park. And I saw the Perth Glory men's team in the park. Now, before to have a football, you need to have the structure, in my opinion. If you don't have a structure, you can't do anything. Football field, the facility is to have your own center where you can have a field, gym, video room, physiotherapist room. You need to have all this stuff here. Is exactly what the men's have. For example, the room of cryotherapy, you need this kind of stuff. And if we will get that, we can show the maximum level of women football. If we will not get that, you cannot say that is the best expression of women football. We need this stuff.
Absolutely. Well, let's hope that that happens. It would certainly, I think, change the landscape of women's football in our two countries and hopefully the rest of the world. So grazie mille being on this podcast. And yeah, what a great conversation. I've learned so much and excited to see what the future brings for our sport.
Yeah, it was a pleasure for me too. Thank you very much.
That's all for this episode of the FIFA Pro podcast, Changing the Game. If you've enjoyed this episode, please do like, subscribe, and review it, or maybe share it with a friend. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.